are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have a gentleman named Dave McCafferty. Did I get that right?
Yep, that's it.
Unbelievable. That's it. 59 years of age. You're 6 feet, 280 pounds. You're a big dude. And you said you've been training for 41 years?
Yep.
I think you got me beat by just a little bit, but not much.
Yeah. So
what we're going to do is here, have a chat today about your training. It looks like you've tried all kinds of training. Mm-hmm. And so first of all, when did you get started in weightlifting, or were you an athlete before all this?
I did a little bit of wrestling, but went to a camp and stuff, but that was about it. And some football when I was like in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
And, you know, not a lot. And then I just started working out a little bit. I was really into arm wrestling. And, you try to find out the best way to train. And so there's a lot of information out there, but a lot of bad information out there. So,
yeah,
you know, so I just kept trying different things, you know, but so, I started one.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
But when I started, I really didn't know anything. I would just come in and just try to max on everything. And I thought that was it. Get strong, get big. And just kind of, you know, went through all the different types of training and stuff like that.
Yeah. So help me do the math instead of me having to try it. So 41 years minus 59. How old were you? 41, about 14, 15 years old? I don't do math very well.
See, it'd be 18.
18. Yeah. What do I know? 18 years old. Okay. So you started that. Did you have your own gym, or did you actually go to like a gym in town or something?
No, I went to a gym in town. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You just went in and started lifting a bunch of weight.
Yeah. I went in and just started, you know, I mean, you look through the magazines, you try to figure out, you know, what the pros or whatever are doing, but yeah. what they say they're doing, but that's really not what they're doing, because they don't want to tell you what they're doing for some weird reason, you know.
Well, I can attest to that, because yeah. I'm at the age too where I got most of my information when I was there wasn't the social media that there is now. So I did a lot of reading, you know, muscle mags, and that's where you get most of your information, unless you have one of these guys that are in town doing a seminar. And I learned early on too that, yeah, what they were saying they were actually doing wasn't what they were actually doing. Now, the reason for that is because in some ways, each one of these guys had their own sort of unique selling point. If you remember guys like Mike Mincer and Dorian Yates and these guys, you know, they, part of the reason why they did that, Dave, was because they were known for, like Mike was known for heavy duty training. Mm-hmm. And then of course Dorian was the HIIT training, and so that's what they're known for. So that's what made them special. That's what sold their training courses. That's really the main reason they were doing that. But I can tell you that from going down there, because I was close to, have you always lived in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was 200 miles away from Gold's Gym. Mm-hmm. So I got the chance to finally go down there to see what it was all about, because my curiosity, I'm sure like with you, when you, as you're reading, you get more curious about things.
Yep.
So I understand kind of where you're at that point. And it sounds to me, if I'm getting what you're saying is right, is that you wanted to be, did you want to be stronger or more muscle or both? And if so, what was the order?
Definitely the order was getting as big as I could, because at 6'1", you know, even I've been up to 327 pounds, you know.
Yeah.
And it's still like you have to weigh almost 400 pounds when you're 6'1". And
yeah.
So my goal was always to get bigger. But I trained with a guy by the name of Jeff Magruder, world champion power lifter. So pretty much his thing was, hey, you know, you want to get bigger, you got to get really super strong. But you know, then again, you see guys bench pressing 500 pounds that, you know, weren't as big as you think they should be.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the thing about that is, and it's an ongoing debate, and it probably always will. It's just good for discussion, if nothing else. And what I learned, I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, to get bigger, you need to lift a lot of weight. And where I had my sort of a altering moment as far as how I thought about this was when I went to Bulgaria, because, you know, they had these doctors that were, they were all national Olympic. They worked at with the national team, and these guys were sharp, sharp people. And they convinced me, and it was based on physiology. And this is the reason why I believe them, not just because they told me, was they said, specifically when you're lifting heavier weight, it's to get stronger. And the secondary benefit of that is to put on muscle. And it's hard to grasp, at least for me, it was hard to grasp my head around that, you know? So they said, when you're doing more repetitions, in other words, volume and not as much weight, the main benefit that you get is muscle mass, because it needs a lot of volume. You need to beat it up over and over again, is what they were telling me in layman terms. And the secondary benefit of that is strength, because you get stronger as you go along. So there's a distinction there. And of course, listen, you know, even to this day, depends on who you talk to, they would say, nah, this is the way I've done it. And that's okay. You know, that we all, there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. But so you started with a guy, of course, you were influenced by a guy who's a powerlifter. I mean, you're big, you're huge. Just your training that you've done speaks for itself. And yet I know from your bio, you've done all kinds of training, which is really the only way that you can really know what works and what doesn't work if you do it firsthand, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So how long did you train with the powerlifter?
It was more off and on. You know, I'd go and see him and we'd train, and, you know, it wasn't a lot. So I just kind of took what he was saying and then, you know, trained that way for a while. And then I switched it to a something else, because you're always looking for the holy grail. And one person will say one thing. And like you said, you know, I trained like Mike Mentzer. I did the dog crap training, which is, you know, drop, you know, rest pause and all that.
Yeah.
And I got really strong, but it's super low volume. But I didn't notice that I was gaining a lot of muscle size.
Right. So you kind of make the point that I talked about. You know, you're stronger because you were doing that kind of training. So your body was actually doing what it was supposed to. It was responding to exactly the environment you were providing it. That's interesting, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, like I say, being a tall person and having that goal of really putting on a lot of size. So I was always searching for the answers, but what's really frustrating, and I think a lot of people, I see them, you know, they're coming up, they're new, they don't know what to do. And, you know, you get people like some of them, like Dorian Yates, and you look at them, man, that guy's massive, or, you know, the higher intensity type training. So they think maybe that's what I should be doing. But as I started looking, as, you know, later, I started looking into the research, and like a lot of these guys that are, they just do research, you know, they're saying that volume is the key driver to hypertrophy. You know, so that's why I started doing a little more volume and got into the Big Beyond Belief, which I did that for a while.
Yeah. So when you were doing your the strength training with, or the power training with your your friend, what did that rep scheme look like? Like, how many days a week were you training, and how many reps were you doing? What was your starting weight, and kind of where did you go down, you know, that path? I'm assuming you went for a while to see what your potential was. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So we would do a light day and a heavy day, train each body part twice a week. And that's pretty much what I've done most of the time. So we would go five low reps one time. And then the next time we would do eights, like 60% of what you'd normally do for your fives. And then just progress up. And I was doing a pretty good amount of volume though, but only training each body part twice a week.
Is that the way he was training too?
Yeah, he trained everybody like that.
I mean, but his training was different though for powerlifting, or was it?
No, it was the same, because he did kind of slightly different, because he wanted to do bodybuilding. So he would add a lot of different exercises in there. Unlike most powerlifters who are just doing bench press and squats and deads, he would do flies and, you know, cable work and stuff like that, because he liked the idea of doing some bodybuilding stuff, because he had competed in bodybuilding too. So
yeah You know, it's funny when I was first coming up, you were mentioning something about how everybody, there was so many ways that people will tell you which is the best way to train. It gets to a point, Dave, at least for me, that you almost get more confused than you were when you first started. You know, it's like, holy crap, man. You know, it gets, it becomes frustrating a little bit.
Oh, it totally does, man. I mean, you know, you just like, they think everything's a secret. They don't want to, like you say, they got their way of doing it, but it'd be nice if they were honest. So you had a direction to go. Yeah. And then, cause I train super hard, man. That's not the issue, but I need to have a direction that's right. You know, so you put your time in wisely, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, do you remember a guy by the name of, Don Ross?
Yep.
Okay. Don, the Ripper Ross, you know, I was lucky to meet a lot of these guys down there eventually, but you know, Don always told me, he said, look, Leo, all training works. It just is to the degree that it works, you know, and that made a lot of sense to me eventually. But so what I ended up doing, because I got so, cause I look at these damn photos, you know, these guys training, and I'm not weak by any stretch of the imagination. And I'd been in the gym now for probably, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years. And I'd look at, and I'd actually count the weights in the photos that they did. I'm thinking, how in the hell? And then I'd read the article, say, how in the hell can those guys be that much stronger than me? And so that's what really got me down to, I just said, I'm just going to go down there. I'm going to go see for myself the Mecca, the Gold's Gym, you know, what's going on down there. Well, you know, there was a different story there. They were mostly telling the truth, Dave, but not all the truth. You know, they were doing, and like with Dorian and Mike, they were doing more volume than they were telling us in the magazines. And that's when I started thinking, okay, I understand now, because they're promoting their way of training, you know. But to a guy like you and me, I'll tell you what, it can actually be dangerous, because I was always striving to be like them, you know.
Thinking,
I can do this. It's like, well, holy crap. When I went down there, I thought, man, you know, that's some pretty dangerous stuff. I mean, it was maybe it's an unintended consequence. I don't know. But the fact remains that they weren't being 100% forthcoming. And it actually got worse than that, because when I went down there years later to do a photo shoot at Gold's Gym, and a bunch of pros there, probably my crowning moment, even of all the competitions that I did, that was probably my crowning moment, is because I felt like I belonged there. I did it with Platts. I'm sure you know, Tom.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we were there. All of a sudden they started bringing these weights out of the back room. They were fake weights. Have you heard?
Heard about that. Yeah.
They exist. You know,
they exist.
Yeah. I mean, they brought the 45-pound weights, and you couldn't tell if they're real or not, man. It was unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And so then I understood a lot more, because that's what they did. When we went to, they had these competitions, FIBOs in Europe and places where they do these demonstrations. Well, guess what? They were sticking these fake weights in between this and doing that. Crazy. You know, it's kind of like, I guess it's like in the industry. Dave, there's the inside of what really goes on, you know.
I know,
and that, but it sure is not a good thing for guys like you, who especially. Did you ever get down to L.A. and go to Gold's Gym and see this?
I went to Gold's back in I think it was like 1985.
Oh, okay.
And I went with my mom and my girlfriend. I told my mom, I said, "Hey, listen, I'm going to spend a lot of time in the gym and some time on the beach, but if that's okay with you, go ahead." And she kept complaining that I was at the. I just went to Gold's and I just sat there for hours and watching everybody and seeing how they train, you know, and the barbarians were there training.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
But they got done and I snuck over there and tried their weights, you know. I'm going, well, you know, that, I mean, you know, it's hard to tell if they're really even doing it, because their brother's grabbing onto the bar and helping them and all this. It's just like that. They're trying to get that certain kind of, you know, step look or whatever.
That, well, they had a persona.
Yeah. That's what
just,
it was.
You know, then down there, as you probably could tell, especially at Gold's Gym, it was a zoo down there, man, you know, and everybody had their own gig, and they wanted to be that, you know. Hell, you had people in there that were actors, and it was a really interesting group of people that were down there at that time, you know.
Yeah.
You were down there during the time where there was still some intensity in the gym. You know, and it's much different now with the way social media is, and it's okay, you know, it's things go through a change like that. But it was just really, I was really surprised later on, years later, when I went back down there, because I'm still a member down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And after I took like a 14-year layoff, I went back down there, and it was just a much different environment. And some of it has to do with social media. It's just a different deal down there. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's not even close to what it used to be. You know, no, the guys don't train hard. Like most guys don't really train hard. They're too busy filming themselves, do the workout and all this, you know? And, the intensity is way down. I think people, you know, first thing is to get on a routine that's a good routine and work hard. Hard work is the number one thing, and diet. And then, you know, go ahead and take your do your other stuff. But people are relying on drugs and stuff, and they're not pushing the weights and hitting the intensity like they need to. That's number one.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the problem. I think that's why Dorian Yates and Ronnie Coleman were talking about how Brandon Curry, you know, he wouldn't even stack up to, you know, the 80s and 90s or what they used to look like, because they worked harder and they dieted harder and that kind of thing.
So, yeah. And the you're talking about the sharing, you know, you know who Tony Pearson is?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I did a podcast with him. Man, he's an interesting guy. He's going to come back on again because he has a book that we're going to be talking about. But he was telling me about because I want to talk to these people that have been in the industry for a long time, and because I'm curious to know how it was back then, you know, because back then was a little bit before like you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Tony and these guys were there, and he told me something that really sounded like what I really wish I could have seen. He said during those days, all the pros were there, and we used to, there was a certain amount of showboating and, you know, playing Jedi mind tricks with each other. There was that. But he said, we were different with each other. We shared with each other. We were a family, you know. In fact, he would tell the story that they all, when Rocky came out, when the movie came out, you know, that was when he was down there in Gold's Gym. And he said about 50 bodybuilders that were training there all went to the show together to watch Rocky. I mean, it was that kind of, if that's the difference back then, where now everybody seems to be more their own, and it's a lot different. And you know, what I really liked is when I went to Bulgaria, they were very forthcoming about the information that they gave, because that's how our books, our training courses got started. The genesis of that was Bulgarian Burst Training. I don't know if you ever heard about that book. That was our first.
Oh, I had the book.
Oh, you had it?
Yeah. Yeah, I had the book.
Okay,
was three times a day.
Yeah. And what I really liked about the Bulgarians and their mindset, and it stuck with me, so many things, that trip stuck with me to this day, because they're relative. And I just liked the way their mindset and their stance was. And they said, look, because I told them, I said, I'm here as an American to learn your techniques and go back home and write a bodybuilding book. I was very straightforward with them. They said, we don't care. We're glad that you're here. And they shared everything with me. I had a bird's eye view. And they gave me all the latest and the greatest. I mean, I was on the inside of that stuff, you know. So they said, you know, we think that, look, you can take your information back, because we're always looking for new ways to train and eat and that kind of thing. By the time, they were about 8 years ahead of our information in the U.S. And they said, look, we don't mind sharing, because by the time, you know, your information gets out, we're going to be on to something else. So we have no issue sharing with you. And that's kind of my point, is that they have that kind of camaraderie where they didn't mind sharing. And I think that's the way, in my mind, that's the way it should be, you know?
Yeah, it should be. But if you go into a powerlifting circle, my girlfriend's she was a state champion. It's crazy. It's completely different. You'll be competing against somebody and they'll come up and say, hey, you know, they'll give you advice and they'll tell you, hey, try this, do that, you know. And bodybuilding is totally different. They're just like, everything's secret, you know, they don't want to tell their, you know, what they're doing. But it comes down to, it's like, dude, you're a genetic freak, man. I'm never going to catch you. So what are you worried about?
Yeah.
You know?
So, let me ask you this. Then, when you started training like that, did you ever enter a powerlifting meet or anything like that?
No, I never did any powerlifting meets. It was like, I did powerlifting kind of training at first because I thought that would help me get bigger. Yeah. I just, you know, more muscle. That was my main interest. You know, somebody said, hey, you know, lift these light weights and do a bunch of reps and you'll get put on a lot of size. I would have lifted light weights and done a lot of reps, you know?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, you know, you have that mindset that you need to have, you know, back then I remember if somebody would told me that I needed to eat dog crap and hit my head up against the wall and it was going to put 2 inches on my arms, guess what I would have done? I mean, you know, yeah, it sounds crazy, that. But you get it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call the average person does not understand that in any possible way, do they?
No, they don't even have a clue. Or somebody will look at you and they'll automatically say some comment like, oh, steroids. And yeah. I'm like, you have no idea.
Yep.
I tore muscles off the bone. I tore my quad tendon off the bone. I tore a chunk of my tricep. I train hard. You guys couldn't do what I've done.
Yeah.
You know, or most of the bodybuilders, you got to eat a certain way and you're training all the time and you're pushing hard. There's more to it than that. You know,
there always is. And it's just frustrating to hear people like that. It's like, oh, you know, yeah. And I think what ends up happening sometimes for those people that are making those kinds of comments, they not only do they not understand it, but I think secretly in the back of their little head, they think, I wish I could be like that, but there's no freaking way that I will. So I'm just going to beg on them.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just a little,
you're right.
Little jealousy and stuff like that, you know, because it was really weird because when I was in good shape, I'd hear, even when I was in my best shape, I'd hear people saying, oh, you look skinny, or oh, that's this, or oh, that's that. And I said, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest with you, it's a bit hurtful, but it's just the way people are. And
jealousy.
You learn to be a little thick-skinned about it, and you go about your way. When you're training, how many days a week were you training, and for how long were you in the gym?
I was most of the time I trained for like 6 days a week. I did 4 days a week for a while. Then I was doing 6 days a week, and then I did a super slow training, which is just crazy, like, you know, 15-minute workout kind of thing. I did that for a few years because I thought, hey, this is the secret weapon,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was in the gym for hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, until I did the other routine. It was only like, you know, 45 minutes and, you know, but I was in there in a while.
Was that only weight training or did that include cardio, or did you do cardio or do you
no,
do cardio?
No cardio.
Weight training. So you're there.
Just weight training.
Of course, you know that from being on Big Bell Belief, we started talking about how important it was to get out of the gym sooner than that because of how your body responds to that and how you're actually really starting to overtrain the body. This is the reason why a lot of these guys had to wait sometimes, you know, 3 or 4 days before they come back into the gym because they were just too much at one time. And of course, you know, that made sense that they couldn't come back any sooner than that. And again, boy, you talk about something that was, if you could imagine, because I did the same thing when I went to the gym, hell, I was an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And when they told me that 40, 45 minutes already, you're starting to push it.
Yeah.
What, you know, how your body responds to that and overtraining and this, that, and the other. I mean, it was like that was hard to get my head around. And, you know, I'm thinking, there's no possible way that I can get all that work done in that amount of time. But surprisingly, I don't know if this happened to you, I didn't realize how much time I was wasting in between sets, you know, taking that extra break before I came back. And I'll tell you what, I actually got it down to where I was doing pretty much the same routine that I had done before, but I was just doing it less time. Did you find that was true with you?
Yeah, I shortened. I tried to combine things together lately. It's hard to do the Big Beyond Belief to commit to going twice a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
So I started, you know, putting things together. Like I did I'll do a shoulders, like lateral raises, and then do tricep push downs and then take a little small break or combine like 3 exercises together, 4 exercises, then take a little break or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Just try to get, cause I started setting my goal at, okay, how much work can I get done in a 45-minute or less period of time?
Yeah.
Is that mainly because your cortisol levels go up and your testosterone levels go down? Is that why the 45 minutes?
Yep, that's pretty much it right there. And you start overtraining the body. And the Bulgarians made a good point. And again, this whole was really hard to get your head around, because it's, you made a comment in the beginning. You have to have faith in this stuff, that, you know, that you're going to, whatever you're doing, that if there's going to be this outcome, you have to go in with a belief and a faith, even though you know nothing about the outcome yet. You take your, what you think is the best step based on the knowledge that you're learning, and then you got to throw yourself into that. And how difficult, think about this, how difficult is that for the average person to really want to do that? You know, that in itself is a deterrence for most people. And so for them to be telling me that, I thought, man, but I did exactly what, you know, you did. As I said, I got to trust that process, and I got to see for myself. And there's time that needs to be invested. And then that's when you learn. That's when you know how well it works, especially for Dave, you know, because look, it's just like what they said about Arnold in the old days. You know, if you train exactly like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you're not going to get exactly the same response. That's just the way it is. That doesn't mean his training strategies and, you know, and techniques and all that are wrong. It's just the way it is, how your human nature is going to respond to that. That's the reason why. When we came up with Big Beyond Belief, Dave, what we wanted to do is create a template, you know, a formula, a training model based on physiology. And that's where the Bulgarians were just unbelievable. You know, they had the reason why, physiologically, why you should be doing this to get possibly the best outcome. And that's all you can really do. You know, I learned that when I was training athletes, is all you can do is put somebody in the best spot for them to get the best outcome. That certainly doesn't guarantee that you'll get that particular outcome. Now, and I think that the X factor, and you brought that up earlier, is that you have to be willing to do the work. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to do the work. And that doesn't mean that you do it when you're feeling good, when everything is going great. Quite the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
And you go, so what we tried to do, and I think we did it pretty well, was, you remember that optimal training zone that we talked about? Okay. Yep. And if you remember that, it's, we took a combination of heavier weight training. It was still based on volume, mm-hmm. but it was heavier. And then you did lighter weight training. So it was all based on volume. It's just that we cut the reps down slightly, increased rest periods. And that kept people in the training, we called that the optimal training zone. And this is where a lot of the guys were having issues, is because they would be in the optimal training zone for just a short period of time, because they would do things like what you're doing, go like all out and train crazy. Well, you know, if you do that for too long, your body's going to shut you down a little bit. You can't sustain that, can you?
No.
Did you find that?
I did an experiment. And I did, you know what, the Cybergenics, remember the Cybergenics workout?
Yeah.
Drop sets, I did that. Yeah. So I tested it. I said, how many weeks can I go before I use the strength as a gauge to see how long I could go? Every single time, when I hit 4 weeks, after 4 weeks, I didn't make any improvement.
Yeah.
So I figured, just like what you're saying, 3 weeks is better. And then I would cut down and do lower volume and do a deload period. And then I'd hit it again.
Yeah, right. Yeah. See, and that was kind of the idea behind the optimal training zone.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And guys back then were either overtraining, in layman terms, they were either overtraining and undertraining. So they were just actually going in and out of that optimal training zone. So it just makes sense, physiological sense. If you can stay in that training zone longer, then you're going to get better results. I think that's what you started learning about the way you were training. I think the smart thing that you did is that you were willing to do the work and find out for yourself and come up with your own conclusion.
Yep.
That's very smart. So let me ask you this. When you're doing all this training, what's your stance on diet and nutrition? As far as you eat a high protein diet, do you believe that you need a lot of protein? How do you feel about stuff like that?
I did, you know, back in the 80s where everything was like, high carbs, almost no fat. I did that for quite a while, but, and I've done several different types, but, I think the best way to go is if you're trying to lean up, the best way for me is the anabolic diet.
So I think high fat diet.
yeah, the high fat, high protein. And then I would take and, you know, stay at like about 3,500 calories is about the best for me for 5 days, and then go up to about 5,000 on Saturday and 5,000 on Sunday if I'm trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
You know, but normally, if I'm just, you know, trying to just stay in shape, I would do a moderate protein. It's hard for me to take in a lot of protein, so I'll have to take shakes and stuff like that, because I don't know, I can only eat so much meat and stuff. So, and then
does your body not break it down as well? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I just get too full.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'll do that, and then I'll try to throw in some good essential fatty acids in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Udo's oil and stuff like that. And then, you know, just try to eat good quality food. And then, you know, on the weekends have a little splurge. But if I'm dieting, I definitely go with the high fat, high protein. I think that's the best way to go for sure.
So let me ask you this. I want to make sure that you know, part of the thing that cracks me up a little bit is now the keto movement, keto diet. Of course, that's a high fat diet. I talked about in some of my other podcasts recently that the Atkins diet, the anabolic diet, the keto diet, the ketogenic diet, those are all the same diets.
Exactly.
It's a different name. And you know something, Dave, that really is surprising to me that the people that are in the industry that are doing these diets, that are touting these diets, so many of them don't really understand exactly how the diets work. And I almost feel like it's kind of like Atkins. You know, he called it a low-carb diet because, and I guess maybe he was smart about that. I mean, his results, he sold a lot of diet courses. But back in those days, you know, everybody thought that fat was the culprit. Eat fat and you're going to get fat. That's what we thought, or they thought. So he probably made a really smart move in calling it the low carbohydrate diet. But what most people don't understand, and this is what I'm asking you, is that they need to eat a certain amount of carbohydrates to flip your metabolism to free fatty acid, rather than people say, oh yeah, I eat a high fat diet. Well, yeah, you eat a high fat diet, you eat a high fat and a high carbohydrate diet, so you haven't flipped your metabolism, and people don't get that.
No, no.
And what's surprising to me, and I want you to elaborate on, you know, how you actually did the anabolic diet. And surprisingly, Dave, the guys that are in the industry, the people that are in the industry are not, in my view, communicating that very well at all. And it makes me, you know, I'm always questioning everything. I don't know if you see any of my Instagram posts. I talk about the Serious Growth Creed. I have an Instagram that I post regularly. And one of the things I came up with is the Serious Growthers, which is guys like you and me, I train. In my Bible is a Serious Growth Creed. There's six components. One of those components is being student of the game. I want to learn this crap to the nth degree. It sounds like what you are. You're that guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And then the other one of the components is I question everything. Everything.
Yep.
I have to, you know, and that helps me to go out there. And when I do it myself, I can question it. And I don't get that sense from the people that are touting some of these diets. There's keto coaches I've talked to, and they are not coherently explaining this diet. And I don't know if it's because they're trying to keep people stupid or they don't know.
Yeah, it's the problem is like Atkins was a high fat, lower protein diet. So this is a high protein, high fat diet, but the carbohydrates need to be like 30. I'm probably at 25, 30 grams.
Yep.
You know, they have to be really low.
Yeah, and some people don't get that.
No, and also you have to realize, too, the first time I did that type of diet, after day four, I'm like, screw this diet. This diet sucks, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I quit after 5 days, okay? And next time I decided, hey, I'm gonna try this again, and it was better the next time. The third time, it was like, cake. So you know that your body becomes its function, what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Your body learns how to convert over. So if it doesn't work for you the first time, the second or the third time, it'll be a breeze.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why Maro told us. He said, you know, what you might want to do is do this for a week or 2 weeks if you can stand it. And you know, it's like you said, the first time you do anything, just about there's a learning curve there, a shock that you have to go through. And by golly, when you're switching, as you know, when you're transitioning from one from glucose metabolism to free fatty acid, yuck. I mean, lethargy and you feel shitty, headache, you know, I know, boy, it was something. And even with that being said, it took about 3 weeks because most people are on a glucose diet, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Keto's a big thing now, but, you know, I'm not really convinced because I don't think keto is set up in a way that makes it user-friendly enough for people to stay on it, in my opinion.
Totally. Yep, I agree.
You know, but most people are on a glucose diet, and when you change over to free fatty acid, it takes about 3 weeks before your body can really – I mean, listen – it's a legit thing to say that we are addicted to sugar. And you know that when you go on a high-fat diet, legitimately, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're going to feel bad.
Think about it. I used to put my ass in bed, so I stopped thinking about it. Go to sleep.
Yep.
You know, get to the next morning because if you chain up the refrigerator, I might just break down.
I know.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's pretty crazy that way.
I know.
But you're right in that, you know, the more that you did that, all of a sudden, because your body becomes its function, it has a big learning curve. All of a sudden, it was like, you know what? I actually felt better being on a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet than I was when I had carbohydrates.
Yeah. And the only bad thing is trying to find variety. So I end up going, well, what do I eat? Screw it. I'll just have some meat and put a little bit of mayonnaise on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like, put mayonnaise on it.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty funny because back then it was like that. And you know, I don't know if you know, I talked about the 52 diet. Morrow actually was the one that told us that we could do it this way. And he was right. And again, Morrow was that guy, Morrow DiPasquale. He's that guy that says, in my mind, he's a serious grocer in the sense that he follows those six components. He does stuff to the nth degree. That's another component that I talk about.
Yeah.
He's a student of the game, and he can give you the why. So Morrow, what he ended up doing, I thought was a beautiful thing. And this is why I think that the anabolic diet is much user-friendly than a keto or even Atkins, because here's what Morrow said you can do. Maybe you already know this. He said Monday through Friday, you do the high-fat diet. On the weekend, because most people socialize on the weekend, but it could be any 2 days. He said, then you can go on and eat whatever carbohydrates or whatever the hell you want. And he says, don't even worry about protein intake because in 2 days' time, it's not going to matter. The beauty of that was because it takes 3 days. I'm not telling you something you don't know because I can tell that you know this. Most people don't. They don't have a clue about that. Even the keto people. This is what drives me nuts, you know. Mm-hmm. But he said, well, it takes 3 days for your body to convert. So even though you're taking carbohydrates in, you're not in a free fatty acid metabolism. Therein lies the distinction of that particular diet. And there's how you make that diet a much friendlier diet, you can imagine, than just eating like Atkins did. Well, you never caught carbohydrates or some of these ketos, from what I've seen, and I haven't looked at it all, but I get what they're doing. Most of it is they're a low carbohydrate and the, they're not really changing that up. Have you checked that diet out by any chance? The keto?
Keto diet. They just stay keto. That would drive me crazy.
Right.
I would lose so much weight, so much water so quick. But, it's funny. I mean, like on the weekends, I'll cut my protein way, way down, blueberry pancakes and, but I'll count all my calories.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. I'm kind of like you, you know, I got to count. People, you say, count how many calories are you taking in? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I'm just counting my macros. Well, in a sense, you're counting your calories, you know, I'll purposely take it way down and jack the carbs up and get, like I say, 5,000 on Saturday, 5,000 on Sunday, you know.
So, and go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Keep going. It definitely gives you a break, you know, from the high fat, high protein.
Yeah. So. And the funny thing is I actually, what I did, Dave, to make things, I wanted to make things simple as I could and still be effective. So what I did in terms of counting calories is I went ahead and I always believe in a stated goal. Whatever that may be, whether it's for training or your nutrition, state the goal that you want. Okay, so mine was, I wanted to be able to eat a lot on the weekends. Like when I carb loaded, when I did my carb loading, I would do as high as 20,000 calories over the weekend. Okay, so then, so what I just started doing is saying, okay, how much weight do I, you know, where do I want to weigh? And then I would just take these 7 days and I would say, this is how many calories that I need to eat in 7 days. Over the first 5 days, it's say the traditional anabolic diet. On the weekend, it's this. I just took the week and I just said, this is how many calories I need to eat. And this is the stated goal. And that's, so I set up my diet according to my lifestyle in the way that I wanted to eat, because I tell you what, and this is another thing that drives me crazy and makes me older than I need to be, is that these people that are out there and they say things like, well, I eat healthy, and but I don't count any calories, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard that too much over the years when I'm dealing with people in my gyms. I still have training studios. And they just simply think that by eating healthy, that's the answer. And,
no.
And the diets that are out in the market today, and listen, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with keto at all, because it's part of the high-fat diet. Mm-hmm. But I think the mark of a good, whether it's a training program or it's a nutritional program, the mark of a great nutrition program, in this case, or a diet, is the one that you stay on for forever or for a long time, not these damn diets where you're coming on. I just gave it a name the other day when I was doing the Instagram post. I called it the honeymoon diet. Most of these diets, like Jenny Craig, Nutrisystems, you know, some of these diets, like I think keto to a certain extent, I've dealt with people who've done keto and they do it for a while, but they don't stay with it for, it seems like, for very long, you know? So I don't think that's the mark of a good diet, in my opinion. So here's my mindset was like, okay, so what if I could design a diet for somebody, and myself included, that was user-friendly, lifestyle-friendly? What if I could do that? Wouldn't that make sense to do that? Because I would think, if I'm designing something based on the foods that you like and your lifestyle, why the hell wouldn't you stay on the diet? Doesn't make any
sense,
you know? So you did the... When you carb loaded on the weekends, you said you counted your calories, but what was the percentage of, for example, if you know this, of carbohydrate versus fat that you used to take in?
I don't know the actual percentage. I know my carbs were up there. My fats were probably moderate and my carbs were as high as I could get. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's pretty hard to eat like, you know, white rice and this and that. I mean, I'd have donuts and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Bacon, donuts, and all that.
Yeah. Well, on a weekend, I wouldn't have too much bacon and stuff. Uh-huh. I just have that. I get sick of eating eggs after 5 days of eating eggs and stuff and bacon and all that stuff. So it was kind of nice to have a break and I wouldn't have the eggs on Saturday and Sunday, you know. But I know what you're saying. I mean, my mom, like she said, I'm eating really good and I'm not losing weight. And I go, Mom, it doesn't matter if you're eating good. If you're eating too many calories, you're going to, you know. That's a key factor.
Yeah.
People like I say, they're into the macros and stuff. Well, you still, calories are the main thing. You have to watch your calories, you know? So
one of the things that happened to me that I learned, I started, again, being that the student of the game, is I wanted to know exactly everything about each one of those macros and what they're, you know, how they really did perform. How I wanted to learn how to use them to the maximum benefit. And what I was getting, I don't know if this doesn't sound like, because you haven't said anything, but what was happening to me on the weekends is at first I was doing like you. I was eating just high carb, moderate to low fat, and no protein. I mean, there's always protein in foods, but
yeah,
you know, comparatively speaking. But what was happening to me, David, I was just like constantly, I was like lazy. I was like, I can hardly move. Now I would fill up because of the carbohydrates. But I was just like, it's hard for me to get around. Now, be it that I was eating 10,000 calories per day, that's like a damn full-time job. I was like, I couldn't hardly get around. And I said, this is not lifestyle or user-friendly to me.
I'm doing it
because I'm a meathead bodybuilder and I'm okay with that. You know, I'm doing what it takes. Well, this is something that I learned. And I think Mauro was the one that turned me on to this, if I'm not mistaken. Mauro said, okay, increase your fat intake when you're doing your carb loading. Why? Because I wanted to know why.
Yeah.
Here's what happens when you add fat to carbohydrates. Fat controls sugar, Dave. Mm-hmm. What it does, it absorbs that sugar in your body, all that sugar, because your body can only handle so much sugar before it has to store it as a triglyceride of fat. But he said, if you'll eat a higher level of fat while you're doing your carb loading, he said, it's going to smooth out your moods, because right now you're just shocking the crap out of your body. You're spiking the body, and then it's crashing because it's got nothing to slow that down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I would go and have a hamburger and French fries and stuff like that. There you go. That's... So I was getting that in there. So I remember that part of it you were saying.
Yeah.
So I did have the fats in there, and I didn't notice any of that crash or nothing. I felt fine, you know. So it did make a huge difference for sure.
Big difference, you know.
Yeah, big difference.
And then the funny thing was, you probably felt this way too. Man, when I used to carb load like that, and I go back into the gym on Monday, holy crap. And I did a set, you know. Oh, man, you got so tight. You
yeah.
know, so good, but it was like it hurt. It was like,
yeah. Yeah.
Did you get that feeling?
Oh yeah, yeah. You're pumped. You get a.
Oh my God.
You know what's funny is, one of the bodybuilders we're talking about, I think Fuad or something, in one of his podcasts, he was talking to a bodybuilder, and he said, "Oh, I did this keto diet, or, you know, high fat, high protein, but you know, I come in the gym and I wasn't getting a pump, and I'm thinking, the whole thing is to gain muscle. The pump. If you don't get a pump, that doesn't mean you're not going to grow.
Right.
That's you know, so." You know, yeah. It's just kind of funny.
Some more misunderstanding in the industry, you know?
Yeah.
It's like people think that the being sore is the sign of a good workout, and it's not. It just, soreness is just your body adapting to its environment, and it's smart, and it learns how to convert that into energy, blah, blah, freaking blah, blah, you know? And it's just, that kind of stuff is not out there right now. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to come back after all this year, the layoff. It's kind of, you remember that the first ad that Jay wrote for me where it said, I got to get this off my chest before I explode. Do you remember that? It was a 16-page ad. And that was the ad, a direct marketing piece, advertisement that Jay Abraham wrote for us. And on the headline at the top, it says, I have to get this off my chest before I explode. That was his way of sensationalizing.
Yeah.
Well, when I came back after 14-year layoff, I got that feeling. I go, I got to come back out here and say something about this, because otherwise I'm going to have another stroke, and I can't, you know? But it was driving me crazy as far as the information that was out in the industry. You know, I think in some ways that, you know, listen, we've got a lot more information out there, which is a good thing. But can also be, again, like when you and I were in the beginning reading magazines, it could almost be too much, and people will become a little bit more than a little bit confused. And the end result is that they're not getting the results.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, I talked to one guy and I said, oh, I carved up for 2 days. And he was mentioning one of the bodybuilders who, he said that he went in and he ate all these carbs. He was on a keto style diet. And he said, man, he stayed in ketosis. I said, well, it takes 3 days for your body to convert and over to, running glycogen, you know, using glycogen for an energy source. And, he just kind of looked at me funny, you know. It's like people don't know that.
Don't.
A lot of people don't know that.
They
you
don't.
Know?
It's so. I don't know if I should be so shocked about this, but I am still shocked about this, you know. And especially when everybody is a coach now, and I'm happy in the industry that you know you got more people that are able to do this stuff. But gosh dang it, you know, when you're out there and you have people that are unsuspecting clients that are putting themselves in your hands. You don't realize sometimes how dangerous you are to them as a trainer.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know? I was going to ask you, when you were doing the anabolic diet, did you do it off season and before contest too?
I did it for 5 years straight.
Dang.
And I did my best condition. I came in at the nationals and it's the one I won the heavyweight. And this is when I was working with Platts now, but so I was working with Platts and Morrow, and I had written that diet. So I had Marl's and my diet, but I did it.
Yeah.
I did it for 5 years. And here's the thing that was crazy about that. You know, in most cases, the way bodybuilders were doing the last week, because have you ever competed in a show, Dave?
Yeah, I've done about three or four shows. Yeah.
Well, you probably know that the last week is just really, it can make or break all your off season, you know?
Yep.
Which is disheartening. And another reason why most people aren't in the sport of bodybuilding because they can't handle that crap.
Yeah.
It's just a part of that again. So Morrow said, you know, the mistake that all of these guys are making, this is they were on a glucose diet. He said last week they would do this carb depletion, carb loading, and it was timing, you know, your body to come in and peak at the right time. Well, if you haven't done that for the whole off season, and fiddling around with it, and not to mention that you know how your body gets when you're that lean.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
The way that it responds to stuff. Well, hell, most of them would come in flat and, you know, or smoothed out, you know. So Mara was just very analytical about this stuff. He says, if you're doing this stuff, because he knew how physiology worked. He says, if you come in, and I did the 52, if you're carb loading every weekend and you're going to know in how many hours that the body starts spilling over water to smooth you out. And that's what I did. I was eating McDonald's French fries. I ate this. The funny, here's the where I got the biggest kick out of this thing was at the morning before the prejudging. Of course, everybody's in there, you know, eating like birds. You get up early in the morning. Being very careful. I'm in there slamming hamburgers, pancakes with butter. And I came in just right, man. It was the best shape that I was in.
But see, that's crazy.
The body got used to that. It became, the body became its function. All I had to do was trust that. And yet, how many of us, and I was guilty of that. Platts even told me that. He goes, most bodybuilders, what happens is they get to that point, you get crazy in the head. That's why you need some really good instruction at that point. And I can do a little bit better. And they end up crash landing into the.
Oh, yeah.
How many times does that happen?
Yeah. Oh, lots. So when you were doing your contest, what kind of calories were you taking in for that?
2,500 during the week. I was stair-stepping. I did like 20. I can't remember exactly, Dave, but I'll give you the gist of it. I would start like at 2,200, and I go to 23, and at 25 was Wednesday, and then I bring it back down. So I did like a little mountain, you know, a peak. And then on the weekends, I'd go 10,000 calories. I did that all the way into the damn show.
Yeah. Damn. What'd you do on the off season then?
My off season wasn't really much different. That's kind of really? My point. Yeah.
How did you end up losing body fat when your calories were pretty close to the same then?
I didn't get that far out of shape. I was about 13. That was okay. The key. When I first started, the mistake I made was like, okay, I'm thinking, okay, I'm bulking up. My very first show was like, everybody was bulking up.
Oh, yeah.
And then my second show, I bulked up even more. Well, damn. I was so far. I was like 50, 60 pounds out.
You know? Geez.
So I didn't really come in that much better shape. And that's when I learned, stay a little bit closer to competition weight. How did you do your deal? Did you get way out there? Or did you stay
pretty close? I got out a little ways, yeah. And then I dialed it in. But it's funny you say that because when you're starting after you've had all those calories – and you drop them down and your body is really in that fat burning mode.
Yeah.
And then as you go up in your calories, then your body relaxes and you're probably losing more body fat instead of staying the same calories all the way through to 5 days.
So true. Not too many people get that. You got that. Mm-hmm. Hey, when you were getting ready for the show, you didn't do cardio then either? Just training?
No, I didn't do any cardio, but see, my thing on cardio is I try to do no cardio or little to none, I tell people, because you only can do so much. So if you start off and your diet's dialed in and you're getting leaner, wait until the diet stops working. Then add just a little bit of cardio, maybe a couple days a week, 20 minutes, and then slowly increase your cardio. Because I've seen like my buddy, he was down to like 1,500 calories and 2 hours of cardio, but he was so close to being there, but he wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
So I kind of take a little bit of different approach to it.
Yeah. You know? Oh, that's true. And one of the things I've experimented with too is what we know is that, at least for me, my mindset back then, but like a lot of people's, was that if this is good, I'm talking about cardio now, then more must be better.
You know? Yeah.
For one show, Dave, because I committed to whatever I started, you know, I thought, okay, now this time I'm going to do, I was doing about an hour a day normally, you know, hour and a half generally when I first started.
Yeah.
And I thought, look pretty damn good. I'm going to try 3 hours a day. Believe it or not, for one of my shows, I was doing 3 hours a day. David, I would have to get up in the middle of the damn night to get my cardio in because, you know, life happens and you got to go to work, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And it was the worst shape I ever came in a show.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, what happens is your body starts thinking, oh, wait a minute now. We got to spare some. You know, this guy's getting too close to starvation, so we're gonna start burning off all this lean weight. And I call it being skinny fat. I was skinny fat at one of my shows, and it was awful. It was the worst shape I ever been in.
So the last show I did, which is a while ago, but I got to that point where I was really lean, but I did no cardio. I was at, you know, so if I would have started doing cardio at that point, and I could have came in a lot leaner, but that was a good point where I was kind of getting to that point where things weren't working so well.
Yeah.
That's when I should have really hit the cardio, but I got, you know, I was really close to the show. I should have probably waited and did the next show and came in super sliced, you know?
Yeah.
So
what was your competition weight?
About close to 250, 245, right around there.
It's big. Yeah. And so, did you do any body fat testing to see how lean you actually were, or did you just go by the mirror?
Yeah. I was down to about 4% or so. Wasn't super, you know.
I know, but the more you weigh like that, 4% at that weight is really lean. Were you pretty,
I was pretty lean, yeah. I think I could have been leaner, and I think, like I say, the cardio would have got me there if I would have just, you know, waited maybe another show to the next show.
And
did some cardio would have helped for sure.
You know, the way that you were doing your strategy was very much like the guys were doing in the 60s. Do you remember a guy by the name of Vince Gironda?
Oh, yeah.
Vince, Giant Guru. I don't know if you know this, but I trained in his gym. Did you know that?
No. Nice.
Oh, I'll tell you what. You talk about a character. I've never met anybody like Vince since then.
Yeah.
I mean, he's everything they talked about in the magazines, probably just a little more than that. But during those days, they didn't believe the diet that Vince put people on was a low carbohydrate, high fat diet. I mean, these guys have zero carbs in those days.
Damn.
And no cardio. That's how they were training. Vince was actually ahead of his time because after Vince came the Atkins and all that kind of stuff. So Vince was very, but they didn't do any cardio. They just believed that you just did it with training and diet. That's very much kind of like what you're talking about.
Yeah. I say don't do cardio, rely on your training and your diet. And save it for later if you need it, you know, because you can only do so much. But I went into the contest because I was doing the Big Beyond Belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny because I was looking at the routine, and I'd never done any high volume like that before. So it was me and a buddy of mine. He wasn't getting ready for a show. And I said, well, you know, I'll try it. You know, I mean, it's a lot of volume. And if anything, it's 2 days, it'll help me get leaner.
Yeah.
Big surprise. It also helped me put on a lot of muscle.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I didn't expect that. You know, I was going into it just thinking, it'll help me get leaner, but yeah.
Okay. So, at the gym that you're training now, is it a big gym? Is it a small gym? What kind of environment are you training in?
It's a small gym. I go to another gym. It's a little bit better atmosphere sometimes, but the one I'm at is Anytime Fitness, so it's not real big.
I think I heard of that. Anytime. Yeah. Do they have a few clubs that are, is that a chain?
Yeah, it's a chain. Yeah.
That's what I thought, it seems like I've heard of that. And then what's your body weight right now? You look pretty big.
About 280.
280. Got any plans are you planning to come back and do anything else?
Well, I had both shoulders completely replaced. So, you know, I can hit heavy iron. That's not a problem, but I don't quite have the range of movement. So I thought about doing the Emerald Cup. So I just have to commit to back to the two-a-days again, which is hard to do, hard to get in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, the workout was – I like it in some ways. It's super nice. It's, you know, it's really quick. But then you got to squeeze in those two workouts 6 days a week, makes it kind of tough.
It does. And, you know, when we first came out with the Bulgarian Burst, we knew that the, you know, for people to get in three times a day was not going to be user friendly, but our mindset back then was, it was a stated goal. We wanted to have people put on as much muscle mass as humanly possible. That's always been the stated goal. What Bulgarian Burst looked like. And then of course, as we're going through the different evolutions, I guess, if you will, we had the Serious Growth and then Big Beyond Belief. Then we started making some slight adjustments. And did you ever do our Titan training?
No, I saw it. I wanted to try it. I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit easier to do, a little user friendly.
Yeah, it is. The most of it. We're actually, I'm just going to tease you with this, but we're actually coming out. It's going to be launching in March. About middle of March, maybe. Well, we plan on having it out middle of March. We're coming out with a new training program.
Nice.
It's going to be called, well, I can't tell you what it's going to be called. I just want to have fun with that.
Yeah. Anyway,
the point is this, you know, we're back again in the industry. Podcasting was my way back in so I could get this stuff and meet guys like you. And I have to say this, David, it is so damn humbling when, because serious growthers are coming out of the woodwork now.
Yeah.
And I'm in shock, to be honest with you, because, you know, sometimes you don't know. Are you a personal trainer now?
Yeah, I do some personal training. Yeah.
All right. And sometimes you don't really realize how much you impact people. You know, when you're doing it all the time, you just, I don't know if it's taking it for granted or it's just what you do every day, you know? And what you don't really realize sometimes, and I learned this as a personal trainer from people that come back and see me or that have just told me stories, you know, from being on our program, whether it be the bodybuilding programs or the people that are in my fitness and my studios, is that it's very humbling when people say some of the things that they do. And it's very humbling, Dave, that we have people out there like yourselves who have been strong supporters. And I'm having the people that have been on our programs, I want them all to come on and share their experiences like you did. But I also wanted to tell you that I am very honored and humbled that you have been a, I don't know if you want to call it a fan, but a supporter of ours. And I really do appreciate that. You know, and I appreciate you telling your story and that you're still doing this stuff.
Yeah, I've been a supporter since 1985.
Jeez. I mean,
85, man.
Yeah, that's about when we started. It was like around there, you know, not too long there after that. So anyway, let me ask you this before we wind this baby up. Is there anything that you're promoting or that you'd like to promote on our podcast? Like a supplement or anything that you do. Some people have things that they're doing online, and I certainly you're welcome to promote that.
Not a supplement, but I'm trying to get an online training business going, which is, you know, it's good. It's not as good as actually being there and helping somebody, but, you know, trying to get that rolling. I don't have any kind of supplements or anything like that going.
So you're doing, you're basically what you're doing is promoting yourself as a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have a website that people can go to?
Right now I'm trying to put something together. It's McCafferty Fitness that I got a, just look at McCafferty Fitness.
That okay. I can tell you this, like when I was starting out, you know, it's a learning curve.
Yeah.
The totally. Best way to, I still believe, you know, even with all the social media stuff that's out there, I still believe that the best way to promote yourself is through word of mouth. And it's a little bit longer, but you know something, Dave, in my opinion, I think you're going to have a client that's going to stick around a lot longer. It's just a slower process. But then if you start doing things like, you know, obviously it'll behoove you to learn how to play the game. As Arnold once said, he goes, you know, these guys are competing, they get all pissed off. And they go back and they throw the trophies. And it's like, you got to learn how to play the game that you're in. And even if you don't really know the questions at this point, it doesn't matter. It's just like training. You have to be willing to go out and at least attempt to learn how to play that game to benefit you in the best way possible. But I still believe that you get people in shape, they're going to talk about that. You know, they're going to come back to you and they're going to stick around with you. So how long have you been doing personal training for quite some time?
About 15 years. Yeah.
And you do it at the gym that you're going at, or have at home, right?
Anytime. Yeah. I go to anytime.
Did they give you a rough time about bringing new clients to them? They want to get your slice of the pie.
No, because I worked a deal out with the owner and, she passed away, but her husband still owns it, and the deal still stands. So I can just train people there. I don't have to worry about it.
Anything. That's a beautiful thing, because when I first started, as I was getting busier, I didn't have a place, so I had to go to these other places. And my pitch to them was, "Look, I'm going to bring you a new client or a new member, and I just want to train them there." And it was all good and fine until they saw me getting busy. It's like,
piece
of the action here, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But look, you know. Things just kind of work out, and that's they almost forced me, because I was working in like three different clubs. I was like, you know, just driving from place to place and trying to build a clientele. And they actually did me a favor at the end of the day, because it forced me to get into my own facility, and the rest is history, you know. So I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast, And, you know, you never know. Maybe one of these days we're going to cross paths. Who knows?
That'd be great. I'd love it. Yeah.
Be looking out for this new program that we got. I know. All right.
You have my email, so you got to send me the information.
We'll let you know as soon as it comes out.
That'd be awesome.
Hey, if I don't ring your bell like around the middle of March, you better come kick my ass or at least call me.
I'll be hunting you down.
Hunt me down. Listen, man, it was good. It was good to meet you. Thanks for coming out.
Nice to meet you. Nice talking with you.
Take care. All right. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.